We are in week 9 of the story. We are going through a 31-week process through the whole book of the Bible. And it's a brief overview, but we are in week 9 of 31 weeks. And so we're moving through the Old Testament rather quickly. And so today we are on the book of Ruth. How many of you guys read your chapter this week in the story? So good job. Fun stuff. I'm hearing lots and lots of good reports about that book. So good stuff. So we have today the book of Ruth. And so I want to ask you, have you ever had that moment where life has taken your lemonade and turned it back to lemons? You know, we've had those moments, those times when you just feel like the sweetness has been sucked right out. You've moved from sweet to bitter. Everything's just going fine, and then insert life catastrophe here. You know, whatever. We've had those moments. And chances are we're going to have those moments again. Times of loss, a lost job, a money loss, a health loss, a lost friendship, a lost relationship, a lost loved one. When life goes from full to empty, from the sweet life to bitterness. And this is how the book of Ruth starts out. A quick description of how someone's lemonade got turned back into lemons. How the sweet life was filled with bitterness and how a full life was drained to empty. The book of Ruth takes place during the time of Judges. The events that we just read and studied about last week, these huge major wars and takeovers and this up and down of Israel. And in the midst of that, we have this story of Ruth that happens, where a man named Elimelech was married to a woman named Naomi. And they were from the tribe of Judah, and that meant that they had a certain portion of land that was given to them when they moved into the promised land, as all the Israelites, all the land was dispersed to different people, and they had a plot of land that was given to them. And so they had two sons, and Naomi considered her life full at this point. We read that a little later in the scripture when she's reflecting back. But she considered her life to be full at this moment. Then a famine hit, and it hit so hard that they had to move to Moab and live there. And I'm not sure many of us can really relate to this situation, not this exact situation. We don't have to worry about famines in our lives, at least not here in America. Sure, a drought will happen from time to time, and you'll hear that it's rough on the farmers, but how many of us really experience that the prices might go up a little bit at the grocery store, but we're not talking an all-out famine, not what they were dealing with, not what they were living in. You know, it'd be like if your husband came home one day from work, and things just didn't seem right with him, and he's just very, comes in and says very little, and he settles in at the couch, picks up the remote, and he's watching TV, except he's not watching TV. You know, he's just there. And it's noticeable. The evening progresses, and he's just numb. And you deduct that something went wrong, something happened, but what? What was it? Then lying in bed, in the dark bedroom, he breaks the evening's silence. He says, "They laid a lot of guys off at work today, and I was one of them." And as a loving wife, you encourage him. You say all the right things. You know, we'll get through this. It'll be all right. This will pass. With your skills and reputation, it won't be long before you find another job. But it is. And he doesn't. See, it's weeks later and then months later, and all of your savings are used up. And then 6 months later, you've dipped out of your retirement and sold a car, so you're down to sharing one car. Then it's a year later, and you've missed a few mortgage payments, and you've had to ask for help with the electric and water bills. Then it's a year and a half later, and you have no one to turn to for help, because it's not just you, it's everyone. Everyone is in this level of struggle. Everyone's struggling at this level. And now the bank owns your house. And your husband says, our only hope is to move away from our family and friends to a city filled with foreign people whose ways and practices aren't like those of our family. But that's really our only chance to try and make ends meet. That's the only chance we've got. And this was a big deal because the land that was given to Elimelech, it was viewed as being given to them by God. It was the promised land. And so that land was a big deal. It was a big deal to leave that land. That portion of land was meant to be passed on, passed down to his two sons, and it was meant to be kept into the family. And he's saying to his wife that this is our only chance of survival, is to leave this behind. And Naomi goes along with him because it's that bad. Because the mother hears the growling stomachs of her children and knows that they've done all they can to provide even one meal a day. And so you and your husband and your two boys, you head out. And at this point, Naomi is thinking, I still have my family. I still have my husband. I still have my two boys. And they move to Moab. Things have got to be rough when you're moving to a place like Moab. Moab is connected all the way back to Sodom. Their pagan practices and the lifestyle there connected to Moab. It was a place that would not have been accepting of Israelites. It was a pagan culture. They were no friends of the Israelites. There would have been a great deal of tension. There would have been a great deal of prejudice towards the Israelite, towards an Israelite family moving there. But that's how bad it was, that moving to Moab was a good decision, was the best decision that they could make. And then while living there, Elimelech dies. Naomi's husband dies. And so now Naomi is a single mom in a foreign, pagan, hostile environment with two boys. And then there's a glimmer of hope as her two sons find wives and they marry. But that is short-lived as her sons also die. And since there are no grandchildren mentioned, we have to assume that this happened not long after they were married. So Naomi has suffered. Boy, has she suffered. A severe famine and things there that we can't even relate to. Watching her son's hunger and her husband trying to do what he can to provide. Coming to the point where the famine is so bad that they decide to relocate to a foreign, pagan, prejudiced Moab. She suffers the loss of her husband and the loss of both of her boys. And it's just her and her Moab daughters-in-law and all of this loss and all of this grief when your lemonade gets turned back to lemons. And at this point, Naomi hears that things are better back home, that the famine has been relieved a little bit. And so the three of them pack up, and they're going to head towards Judah, back towards Bethlehem, where Naomi is from. But along the way, Naomi tells her daughters-in-law that they should return to their land, back to Moab, back to their people, where they can find husbands among their own people. She even says, you know, am I going to remarry? And if so, if I have sons, are you going to wait for them to get old enough to marry? Surely not. And there were many tears shared during this time. One of the daughters-in-law kissed her mother-in-law goodbye. But the other, the one whose name is the title of this book, Ruth, she would not leave her mother-in-law. And so we have this famous promise that Ruth gives to Naomi, this Moabite woman, gives to this Israelite mother. She says, don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if anything but death separates you and me. When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. And so they make it back to Judah, to a little town of Bethlehem, where Naomi had left many years before. And the people recognize Naomi, and they're saying, "Isn't this Naomi?" And Naomi responds, "Don't call me Naomi," she told them. "Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full," and this is where we read that, "but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi?" See, Naomi means pleasant, or it means sweet. So there's an interesting play on words here between Naomi and Mara, bitter and sweet. "Why call me sweet when my life is filled with so much bitterness? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me." See, she wants to be called Mara, and Mara means bitter. Don't call me sweet anymore. Call me Mara. Call me bitter. Because that's what I am. Because my life has gone from lemonade to lemons. It's not the direction it's supposed to go. The sweetness has turned bitter. She left full, but she has returned empty. When they arrived, the barley harvest had just begun, and Ruth asks Naomi if she should go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain that the harvesters would leave behind for the less fortunate. And Naomi tells her to go ahead. And so Ruth goes out, and she gleans from a field of a man named Boaz. And it just happened that this man was from the clan of Elimelech. Boaz asked about Ruth and found out that she was the Moabite woman that had come back from Moab with Naomi. So Boaz told Ruth that she was welcome to glean from his fields and that she should not go to another's field. Boaz made sure that Ruth would be safe from the men there. He talks to the men, says, "Don't lay a hand on her. Don't touch her." He provides her with shelter and with water. He says that you can stay here with my servant girls. And anytime you need water, here's where the water is. And he even had her join them for a meal. Just amazing actions from Boaz to this Moabite woman, this woman who was from this foreign pagan land. So Ruth is taken back by this level of care and acceptance, and she continued to glean from the harvest off of Boaz's fields. When she returns to Naomi with just an abundance, Naomi says, "Where did you glean today? Where did you find work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one who at whose place she had been working. "The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz," she said. "The Lord blesses him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead." She added, "That man is our close relative. He is one of our kinsmen redeemers." Then Ruth and the Moabite, Then Ruth, the Moabitess, says, "Even he said to me, 'Stay with my workers until they have finished harvesting all my grain.'" Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It will be good for you, my daughter, to go with his girls, because in someone else's field you might be harmed." So Ruth stayed close to the servant girls of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvests were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law. So in chapter 3, and I want to encourage you guys to read chapter 3 and 4 for yourself. In chapter 3, Naomi plays matchmaker between Ruth and Boaz, and she gives Ruth some advice on how to communicate to Boaz in that culture that she was willing to be his wife, and she was interested in him becoming her husband. And then in chapter 4, Boaz works it out so that he can fulfill the role of a kinsman redeemer for Elimelech. See, in the event where a man dies in their culture, then a certain kin could offer to buy his land and take the widow that would come with that land. I know in our culture that sounds backwards, but you bought the land, you'd get the wife. And that was the deal. The land was very important because the land was so much associated with them. It was a source of identity. This was the promised land. This was the land that God gave you. And so for that to belong to Elimelech and then for them to move away and Elimelech to die, this was a big deal because now they had land that couldn't be claimed. And Naomi would have belonged to that land. So a kinsman redeemer could take the land and take the widow. He would maintain the land. He would maintain his own land for himself. He would maintain the widow's land for her so that her children would be able to carry on the name of their father on their father's land so that Elimelech's name would be able to live on so that his children would be able to inherit the land that was rightfully meant for them. A kinsman redeemer would get nothing for themselves. This was a very caring, it would take a lot of effort. In fact, one of the closest kinsman redeemers has the opportunity before Boaz to do it, and he says, no, there's nothing in it for me. I'd put my own estate at risk if I were the kinsman redeemer. So Boaz, since you're next in line, have at it, if that's what you want. So Boaz, in this case, he took Ruth as his wife to not only maintain the land and take care of Naomi, but to also care for her daughter-in-law and provide heirs for Elimelech's line. And it's a nice little story. It's not a story so much about loss, but a story that's more about redemption, a story that's more about restoration. And you might wonder, why this book? Why is this set aside? If this story happened amidst the story of the judges, why not just include it in the judges? Why not just have it in there where you've got, you know, a story of Deborah and a story of Gideon? And, oh yeah, by the way, and about the same time of Gideon, this little story happened here with Ruth. And then you continue on with the other judges on up to Samson. So why is this story kind of asterisked? You know, it's kind of highlighted. It's set aside. While all of the other drama is going on in Judges, the big drama, you know, Israel as a nation falling away, and then God withdrawing and allowing them to be oppressed by their enemies, multiple different types of enemies. You know, we read about those last week and talked about them. The Moabites being one of them, Canaanites, Midianites, you know, just a bunch of different enemies oppressing them, and then the Israelites cry out to God, they repent, and God sends a judge to set them free. And they enjoy the splendor of God until they choose to do evil in his eyes again and prostitute themselves out. During all of this on a national level, and this is what's going on, all the things that we read about, studied about, talked about last week in here and in your small groups and in your personal study time, during all of that at a national level, in the midst of that, this one little story happens. This one little story involving this woman, Ruth, her mother-in-law, Naomi, and Boaz. The story doesn't have all of the fireworks that the war stories and Judges have. This story might seem insignificant compared to some of those things, but the Bible, in God's order of things, he sets it aside. And said he puts kind of a little asterisk right there by this little book. A story that doesn't have the mighty acts of God that we've seen before in stories prior. Things like Abraham and Sarah having their first child to fulfill the covenant and the promise that God had given Abraham at 190 years old. 100 Abraham and 90 Sarah. Story of Moses and the 10 plagues or Moses parting the Red Sea. Joshua and the Israelites taking Jericho simply by playing trumpets and shouting and marching around the city a certain number of times. Gideon conquering the Midianites with an army of only 300. And yet this story is spotlighted. There's a spotlight shown on it in the midst of all these other stories. And we don't see those fireworks in this story. The story is actually very normal. Why? Why this story? Why is this story set aside? Sometimes it's easy to see God at work in the big things. You know, when God parts the Red Sea for you in your life, You know he's there. You know it's God. You know he's working. When God wins wars in your life that seem impossible, and you know there's no way this happened except by God. When God blesses you in ways that cannot be explained other than by divine intervention. But sometimes we miss the activity of God in our work, or God at work in our everyday life. Sometimes we miss God at work in what we view as just the normal parts of life. Our ordinary situations, our everyday life. In times when it's not about a national issues, about the nation of Israel, but also in times when God cares for his children on an individual basis. When their life has gone from the sweet life to an embittered one. Let's write this down so we take notes this morning. In everyday, ordinary life, God is at work. I think that's one reason why this book has a spotlight shown on it at this point in the story of God's story, that God's arrangement of the Bible. I think that is one of the reasons. It's because we need to see in the midst of all these big things that have happened, from Genesis all the way to Judges, these huge stories, stories of amazing miracles, the sun standing still for Joshua. And then God takes a moment and pauses and says, okay, I work through the ordinary things too. I work and care for the individuals, not just the nation, not just reclaiming land. There are two more reasons why I believe this book has a spotlight here. And the first of these two is to help us see that God does amazing work through his people. Let's write that down. God does amazing work through his people. Sure, God used Moses to save the Israelites by parting the Red Sea. That was an outstanding supernatural feat that could only be accomplished by God himself. Moses was simply a servant. God used Joshua to lead the Israelites to the battle of Jericho, but they didn't lay a battering ram to the door. They simply blew trumpets and shouted, and the walls came crumbling down. That was God working. That was obvious that God did that. Joshua was simply a servant. God used Gideon to lead an army of 300 men against the Midianites. And they used that technique of the clay jars and the torches and the trumpets. And they surround the city. And God causes confusion in the city. And the Midianites kill each other. Once again, Gideon was simply a servant. The same is true when God works in our everyday, ordinary lives. When God is at work, he simply uses people who are willing to be used, servants. And even though it doesn't have the fireworks of the parting of the Red Sea or routing the Midianites with 300, an army of 300, it's still the same premise that God is using a servant person, a servant-hearted person, and working through them. That's what happens, and that's how God works in ordinary, everyday life. This shows up in the extraordinary as well as the ordinary. Just when it happens in the ordinary parts of our life, sometimes we fail to see that it's still the same pattern, that it's still God working through people, God accomplishing what God wants to accomplish and doing so through willing servants. It's the same pattern. So in this story, let's connect to these ordinary people and these ordinary things that God could be using. Because I think this story connects to a lot of us. We might not be able to relate to a famine, but everyone in here, I mean, just in the opening statement, everyone in here connected to the understanding of, I know what it's like when my lemonade is turned back to lemons, when the sweetness of life is just sucked out of it. When I've gone from a full time in my life to an empty time in life, we understand that. So God works in these situations. So first of all, let's connect with Naomi. Am I Naomi? Slow that down. Some of you are thinking, well, no, I'm not really an old widowed woman. We have a number of men here, some young. But am I Naomi? You know, Naomi, she was pushing away people that could be used to help her. So when we act like Naomi in those areas, and Naomi did a lot more in the story, but I'm just going to that one point in the beginning where she's sending her daughters-in-laws away, and she's doing it for their own good. But we know that at this point in her life, she is bitter, and she's pushing people away that could help her. Her daughters-in-laws, they had agreed to go with her. And it was on their way that she turned and said, go away. Go back to your home. Go back to your people. Let me handle this on my own. And of course, Ruth, says the famous Ruth covenant there. Ruth wanted to go with her. She didn't want to leave her alone, but Naomi was pushing her away. So my question is, do we do that sometimes? You know, it's in emergency times of emergency, we'll accept help. We won't even think twice about it. When it's a catastrophe, when it's something that happens suddenly and someone offers to help, we say, yes, absolutely, I need it, because it's an emergency situation. But in the times of our life that just seem ordinary, they just seem like ordinary sufferings, ordinary things, just life. Life goes, I mean, people pass away. And yes, she suffered, and she suffered more than, you know, others in her shoes possibly. But it wasn't something that was out of the ordinary. Her husband passed away. Yes, that was sad, and that was something that she grieved, the loss of him. But that happened. That was ordinary. That was normal. So when we're going through things in our life that we consider ordinary suffering, how easy is it for us to push people away from those things and think, no, this is just normal. This is normal life stuff. I can handle this. I can go through this on my own. How often are we like Naomi? It's just ordinary. It's not worth the extra attention. It's just everyday life. But maybe God is trying to work through someone to encourage you, to bring you hope. And instead of turning down a kind-hearted person, you're really turning down God when you turn down those situations sometimes. So am I Naomi? Are you going through a time when you've moved from a full life to an empty life, and you're just accepting that that's the way the cookie crumbles? And you're turning away people who have been trying to help you in this time? Or are you Ruth? Ruth has a couple of points I want to touch on there, just two of them. First of all, the relationship of Ruth to Naomi. And we'll pull just one little piece there. Is there someone around me that could really use my encouragement? That was so encouraging for Ruth to do what she did for Naomi. The words that she spoke to Naomi, the way she said, you know, I'm going to stand by you. I'm going to stick with you. We're going to go through this together. And you can take from that point forward everything else that Ruth did, but just zeroing in on that part of the story and thinking about what that did to Naomi, what that did for Naomi. Maybe you're Ruth in this story, and you have a Naomi around you that could really use your encouragement, that could really use the words coming from your mouth saying, I'm going to stick with you through this. I don't know what's ahead of us. I don't know what I can do. I mean, she was a Moabite woman going to Israel. She had no clue what she could do for Naomi at that point in the story. But she says, you know, I'm going to go with you. I'll be with you through this. Do we have someone in our life? Do we have a Naomi in our life that we can be Ruth to right now? Or we can communicate to them, I'm with you. I don't know what I can do. I don't know where this road is going. But I don't want you to go through it alone. I'll be here with you. You know, and maybe that is on your heart, and God is using you to encourage this person. This person that's going through a tough time. It's not a unique time. It's not a time of abnormal suffering. It's just a normal time of suffering, maybe a normal time of loss, but nonetheless, loss is loss. Grief is grief. Lemons are lemons. Bitterness is bitterness. Emptiness is emptiness, and no matter how normal it may seem, people in those situations, they can use someone to be there with them. They can use a Ruth in their life. So maybe there's a person that God wants you to bring encouragement to bring comfort to. Is there a Naomi in your life that you are to be a Ruth to? Maybe instead of being Ruth in the Ruth to Naomi relationship, maybe you're Ruth in the Boaz to Ruth relationship. Do I need to accept the help of someone else? Accept the help someone else is offering me? Because sometimes when we go through ordinary times of suffering, not only do we turn away company, but sometimes we'll turn away help or acceptance. Maybe someone is offering assistance, physical assistance or material assistance during your time of helplessness. Have you turned them down? Maybe that person was sent by God, and God was trying to provide for you through them. But because it wasn't the parting of the Red Sea, because it wasn't an army of 300 going against the Midianites, you thought, no, I don't need this. This, surely that's not God. It's just another person being nice. God works through the ordinary times in our life. And God works through people. It's consistent. Maybe it'll take some humility on your part. It took a lot of humility on Ruth's part to do what she did. But you should accept the help. And maybe you're Ruth in this relationship with someone. Maybe there's a Boaz in your life, and you need to accept what they're offering. Accept their assistance. Or maybe you're Boaz. Maybe you're on the other side of that. So let's write that down. Am I Boaz? Is there someone that needs acceptance and or assistance that I can provide? Boaz allowed Ruth to glean from his fields and eventually provided for Ruth and Naomi in a very large way by providing them with the assistance that only a few could have provided them with. He was in the position to be the kinsman redeemer. How has God positioned you? Has God put you in a position in people's lives and some people's lives around you that really only a few people could do what you could do for the people in your life? Are you a Boaz to a Ruth or a Naomi? In addition to assistance, Boaz offers acceptance. And that's a big deal also. And I almost split this into two different sentences just because it really is two different things. See, Ruth was a Moabite woman. It's easy for us to read the scriptures and just kind of get Ruth and Naomi together, and she was a daughter-in-law, you know, she's one of her daughters-in-law. But if we were to see a picture of Ruth and Naomi, this would be a biracial family situation here. Naomi was an Israelite, Ruth was a Moabite, and it was more than what we see in our culture as biracial, because sometimes you can have biracial and both of them are Christians and there's nothing, you know, and even still, there's a certain amount of judgment that goes towards a couple like that, even today when it's so widely accepted. Here we have two people from not just different races, but different backgrounds, different religious backgrounds. You have a pagan Moabite woman and an Israelite a woman, both widows. And yet Boaz offers acceptance to this woman who comes from a background that was against Israel, a background that could be traced all the way back to Sodom and the sins that were there. But Boaz offers acceptance. See, Boaz has some history here that some of you might not remember, and it's not too awful far separate. See, a reason why Boaz might have been a little more compassionate for an outsider was because Boaz's mother was Rahab, the prostitute from Jericho. You can check out the genealogy in Matthew. He points that out very clearly. Boaz's mother was a non-Israelite. She was a prostitute. Sometimes it's easier to offer acceptance when we remember where we came from. Don't forget where you came from. We all have a past. We all have skeletons in the closet. Don't forget that when you have someone standing in front of you that could really benefit from your open-armed acceptance, don't forget where you came from. Don't forget how you were brought to Christ or the love and the mercy that was given to you from the cross. Because that helps. That helps in accepting other people. So maybe God is wanting to use you and work through you to assist someone. Maybe God is wanting to work through you and offer acceptance to someone. Third reason I believe this little book is spotlighted is because we don't always see what God is up to. So let's write that down. I can't always see what God is working toward. I can't always see what God is working toward. Sure, on the surface, this is a simple little story about two widows and a kind-hearted man. And as we look a little deeper, we can see that it's a story that deals with all sorts of little sub-themes, a time of loss, a time of redemption, times of kindness, times of encouragement, times of acceptance, times of provision, times of restoration. But as we zoom out from the story and we look at it from God's perspective, as the story talks about the lower story and the upper story, this little story that might seem insignificant, this little story that's in the midst of all these major firework moments in Israel's history, you know, going from Abraham leaving his country and going into the land where God would show him and having a child at 100 years old and then Moses and parting the Red Sea, and you have Joshua and taking over Jericho and all the things that happened with the judges, Samson, you know, breaking the pillars in the temple and killing thousands of Philistines and all these just huge firework moments. And you've got this one little book about a Moabite woman and about an Israelite woman, both widows, and this man Boaz. And this simple little story of how Boaz takes them in, takes care of them. That story might seem insignificant, but when you zoom out, this story is very significant, and it has a very, very big reason why it has a spotlight on it, why it has an asterisk by it. While all that big stuff is going on, there's an even greater story in the progress. See, the book of Ruth ends with this little family lineage here. It says, then Naomi took the child. This is Ruth, and Boaz have a child. And so it's Naomi's grandson. She took the child and laid him in her lap and cared for him. The women living there said, Naomi has a son, and they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of who? David. And then generations later, from the line of Judah, from the line of David, born in Bethlehem, which is where Naomi was from, was Jesus. See, God allowed a prostitute from Jericho and a Moabite woman into the earthly line that would bring forth his one and only son. You talk about acceptance. Did Naomi or Ruth or Boaz know about this upper story? We have no reason to believe that they did. No reason to believe that God included them on this. So how many of us in our ordinary everyday lives know what God is really working toward? And you may never know. But this brings a great deal of perspective to our everyday life. And the simple things that God might be calling you to do, these different parts that he called these people to play, the part that Ruth played, the part that Naomi played, the part that Boaz played, and how God worked through them. And we see in the little story the amazing things that happened, but in the big story we see this was carrying the line of his son. That's a big deal. Sometimes the simple things that we go through, the things in our ordinary life, they're meant for something bigger. There's a storyline going on that we have no clue about what's going to happen. And maybe the small, simple things, the things that we might consider ordinary, that God is asking you to do, maybe those things are involved in a bigger plan. It might be to simply bring about a sweet turn to a bitter situation for someone. It might be to bring a sweet turn to a bitter situation for all of mankind. One thing is for sure, God works through people. God works through you. God working through you.